Daytime Confidential podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, Quinn isn't happy with Shauna on B&B, Abby uncovers a secret on Days, Tyler Johnson is out at Y&R, and Alex Merrick is back on General Hospital. All this and much more on today's show, so stay tuned. Mike Jubinville, welcome.
Hello.
Joshua Baldwin, welcome.
Hello, Lucas Lorenzo Kerr. How are you?
Good. Last week, you two were jetting off to foreign locales of P-Town. But you're
back. Socially distancing and masked, by the way.
Well, you guys weren't here last week. It was the ladies and I. And so this week, we are going to be talking about what happened. I'm sure that you guys will be able to weigh in on things like Thomas and his dolly, because an ongoing thing from week to week. So let's dive into it. Let's just talk about Bold and Beautiful and get it out of the way, because Thomas's obsession with the Hope doll continues to play out. Josh?
Yes.
Are you enjoying it?
So I'm probably going to be on an island of unpopular opinion here, but
no doubt.
You're
finding the best in everything because you take B&B for what it is.
Well, I mean, I don't like much of what's going on B&B, but it's giving Matthew Atkinson time to shine, and he is playing off of nothing, and he's doing it quite well. I think I like the camera angles they do. I like Thomas coming unhinged. The Hope doll is silly, but it's not unprecedented, and it doesn't really bother me. I like the angle of Thomas coming unhinged. I don't mind the Hope doll.
Like the acting, and you like the technical cinematography.
Yes,
but I don't like the actual story.
No. But that's the way I'm always, most of the time, with Bold and the Beautiful, is that I like individual scenes, I like dialogue, but I don't often like the overarching stories. And Thomas's sudden schizophrenia that was never mentioned before. He's had struggles in the past, but it seems I don't know. There was a thing where he three weeks ago where he hit his head on the bottom of a piano, and then this week he fainted and hit his head again on something in his apartment. And so I'm not really sure what they're doing, but I enjoy Matthew Atkinson, and I enjoyed Scott Clifton walking in and looking at that doll, and I thought that was hysterical. So I like the scenes, but not the story.
It wasn't supposed to be funny.
It wasn't supposed to be funny, but Scott Clifton can't help it. Darren Brooks is similar. They can't sort of not add this sort of over the top look on their faces at times. And Scott Clifton gave that look. There was that point where he had his mouth open and he's pointing at the doll as if, what?
Felt like he was channeling Don Diamont in the way he was talking to Tom.
He was. I thought it was very, I thought some of that stuff was really good.
You all know that I struggle with B&B, but I will never, ever complain about Scott Clifton and Darren Brooks as actors, because no matter what they are given, they always do it.
Yeah,
Scott Clifton has become shit in the show. The weight well. Put it that way, as diplomatically as I can. Mike, what did you think of Quinn and Shauna and Eric? Do you want to see Shauna? Do you want to see Shauna go for Eric?
Not really. I think the thing that threw me is that how fast it happened. Like, Shauna was just, on FaceTime on a phone confessing all this stuff, and now all of a sudden she's at the mansion. Now, I know that Denise Richards wasn't around, but it's still a little bit of a whiplash moment. So I haven't really had time to absorb why she's there in the first place, why Eric would feel sorry enough to give her a roof over her head when she has a place to live already. It just seems out of place, but I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to drive a wedge between, Quinn has given up on Brooke, so now she's got to turn around and have her ire go somewhere. So it's natural that Shauna might be the next person. Although Shauna is acting like she's helping Quinn, I feel like there's a part of her that's starting to like the attention she's getting from Eric. And so now Eric's going to go down the road of being with somebody else who was with one of his sons.
Here's my question, Josh.
Yes.
How long? Let's make bets. 6 months. Well, it could be 6 months. It could be 9 months. With B&B, it could be 2 days from now. How long do you think it's going to be before Shauna is the one who wants her photo over the mantle?
Yeah, it's not. Six, 9 months.
What's the odds?
I agree
before
with you.
The end of the year.
Be fast. I think they've made that portrait that was this iconic thing that was of Stephanie kind of a joke. And I don't mind it so much, but what I do mind, and I actually said this out loud while I was watching B&B, is like, oh, here we go. Here's this thing where they're going to make us think or try to make the viewers think that we didn't see what we saw. And they're trying to make Shauna the victim here. And I'm like, we saw what happened. That's not what happened. I feel like I'm a record player going back to Thomas and Emma. And the thing is, like, they're trying to make us see something, believe something that we didn't, that we know didn't happen. Shauna was just as guilty, almost more guilty than Quinn. Shauna's the one who sent the text message. Shauna, and we got that moment where I felt like Quinn was speaking for the audience, but she's like, wait a minute, I didn't do this by myself. What are you talking about? And so I'm at least glad they gave that to us, but I don't mind it because Bold and the Beautiful has always played fast and loose with the Forrester men and the Maroney men about how they all kind of pass women around. And it gives Denise Richards something more to do and more of her own story. And I kind of like that. I care about Quinn versus Shauna. I don't know that I really care to see Eric with anybody but Donna, quite frankly. I miss Eric and Donna, and I've never really liked Eric and Quinn, and I don't really like the idea of Eric and Shauna. So the conflict is good, but maybe not over Eric.
Zoe's sister Paris arrived. Mike, first impression?
That's nice.
Okay. Josh, first impression?
We're going straight to major crush on Zenday, where Zoe's already conflicted, and she's already just starting out with Carter. And now it's just like, oh, my God. It's like whiplash. I mean, how fast can you move things along? I mean, it's nice to see that Zoe has a sibling, but, you know, you can trade. I still think that they missed the mark by not having Avance come back rather than have Zoe and is, I don't know, like I waver on Zoe. The actress is fine. I don't have an issue with her, but I'm not really sure the character is necessary now. After her father defrauded the entire family with the baby thing, she should have been done. I feel like her getting a sister out of this whole deal, whatever. And Zenday just comes off as creepy. I just get a major creep vibe by the way he just stand back and kind of smirks and looks up and down at these women. And it's just like, no.
Josh. Diamond White, I liked. When she came on, I thought she was, there was an energy to her. We'll talk about this when we talk about Young and the Restless, but it was a little similar to when Sally walked into Genoa City. I felt an energy around Diamond White like I did around Courtney Hope in Genoa City. And I like that. My issue continues is that we now have four black people in the same room, never interacting with anybody else. And it's hard. This is the problem with the larger storylines on Bold and the Beautiful. It's hard to be invested or give anything any urgency when Carter asked Zoe to move in before they had actually ever really been on a date or had sex. It's just very strange. It's very fast. It's out of order. I don't care. I just don't care. I want folks to interact and not be locked in one room. That's what I would like. And quite frankly, I don't mind that Zoe has a sister, but we could have more than one black family. We could have had the Avons and Zoe and her sister. Could all be interacting. I just don't understand the compartmentalizing of the stories. But I like Diamond White. She was great.
Well, you brought up Sally on The Young and the Restless, so let's use that as the transition. Sally arrived in Genoa City. She's going to be Lauren's assistant. She has history with Theo. She's interacting with Kyle. What are you guys thinking of her settling into Genoa City, Josh?
Love. She walked in Summer's office and I was like, oh, thank you, Courtney Hope. Thank you, Young and the Restless. How stupid are you, Bold and the Beautiful, for letting this woman go? She brought energy and life immediately. I've been complaining, and I know nonstop, about the not so young folks that are acting like prudish 80-year-olds. Sally walks in and immediately there's an energy. And I thought, okay, here we go. And then you find out that Tyler Johnson has been let go. And you think, and all I could think was Theo and Sally could rule this town. If they, he's a Brooks, she wants legitimacy. He wants to be loved. I just feel like just when they brought Sally in, I thought, why would you let this boy go? Why would you do that?
Here's my thing about this. And I'm sort of conflicted because what was Sally's big storyline on The Bold and the Beautiful before she exited?
The illness stuff.
The illness stuff, going nuts and a kidnapping.
Yeah.
Well, she was working at Forrester, remember? She was
but that wasn't the big storyline.
Her big storyline was
she was tying people to illness. Things to a panty with pan. I mean, to a heater with pantyhose.
Yes.
And now she just shows up in Genoa City as if nothing is abnormal.
Well, yeah.
I mean, the thing for me is, and I'm like, okay. The other character that we've had come across in recent years from The Bold and the Beautiful was Amber. Now, everybody knows I love Amber.
I love Amber too.
But Amber didn't. I mean, Amber and Deacon, both of which have come from The Bold and the Beautiful, have always been characters that were a little bit dodgy, were underhanded, manipulative, whatever the term is that you want to use them. Mm-hmm. And they didn't lose that when they came. Sally, thus far, I'll caveat it, mm-hmm. just sort of seems to, they sort of seem to be papering over the fact that she just kidnapped somebody.
Well, they had Theo mention it. Theo said that he saw what happened before she left Los Angeles, splashed all over social media, and he was Team Sally. So they did allude to it. I guess
what I'm meaning by that is Theo addressing it is fine. That's totally fine. But I'm like, Lauren's just going to hire somebody as her personal assistant who just kidnapped somebody with.
Yeah.
Lauren didn't do a background check. She just hired her on the spot, knowing her reputation and having met her, knowing that she designed for Forrester.
Eric is her very good old friend. Why wouldn't Lauren have talked to Eric?
Why didn't anybody tell Lauren that Sheila was alive in Los Angeles?
Well, touche.
I mean, I think.
But what I'm, I guess
on,
what I'm getting
she was
at
on
is
for 2 days, and she told Theo, I have my own plans. So I think that some stuff will, maybe, hopefully, you're right. Maybe some of this stuff will come to light and filter over. But
and they've already
she
shown
was never that. Prosecuted for anything. She was never even arrested.
Well, okay, so, but if we're gonna go there with Sally, then we have to go there with every other character on all four shows that don't get arrested and don't get sent away.
Well, with the exception of Sammy Brady, everybody else deserves what they get. No, Sammy deserves what she gets too.
Really fast though. I mean, they did have Sally when Lauren offered her the executive assistant position. They had a moment where Sally looked away from the camera and you was clearly disappointed. And then she went to Jack and she asked about the fashion line and Jack said that they had done away with the fashion line and she walks out and she looks dejected. So clearly she does have a plan, but Sally's always the one who kind of gets knocked down. And again, I don't, not to beat a dead horse, but that's why I kind of thought she and Theo would be awesome together.
Mike, what did you think of Sally's arrival?
No, I thought it was great. I mean, she was a breath of fresh air. It was like, she came in and it wasn't like a big scene where she blustered in. She just kind of showed up at Newman or at Jabot and and chatted up with Summer. It's like she's always been there. I am looking forward to her. I think it was a good get for YNR to get Courtney Hope, and I'm glad that they decided to keep her the same character. So I thought it was good. My first impression was definitely a good one.
Well, while Sally is breathing new life into Genoa City, Dina is not breathing and is without life.
A classic Kerr segue.
We had a will reading this last week that brought the Abbotts together along with Theo. Mike, what did you think?
Well, what I think is the will reading was okay. I mean, it's kind of nice when the Abbotts all get together and they get all, you know, family-like, you know, like all Abbott-y.
It's comfort food. It's comfort very, food.
Yep, it is. I'd say, like, through that whole will reading, the only thing that I'm jealous of is that Abby got the Paris house, because that's the get for me in that whole thing. But the overarching thing is how they treat Theo. Oh. Like, I can't get past the animosity that Kyle has toward Theo.
Is it they or is it Kyle?
Well, it seems to be like at first when he went to the thing and livened up that party and they had that COVID dance. Then
they did have COVID dancing.
And then they went to, like, Jack welcomed Theo to that whole thing. And then when he walked in, he had to explain that the lawyer invited him to the will reading and they were all side-eyeing him, even though they were nice to him, and it didn't make sense. The only one that's holding this grudge, which I don't even know where it's coming from anymore, is Kyle. And he's
Mike,
coming off like
the biggest.
You think
that a wealthy family, that a wealthy family who has a ne'er-do-well cousin isn't going to provide side eye at a will reading being like, I wonder what he's here for.
That's a valid point. However, Kyle's animosity toward him goes back far enough.
I get that with Kyle specifically, because the Kyle Theo thing has always felt contrived. I totally get you on that part. But for the Abbotts to be giving him side eye at a will reading, how can you not have side eye at a will reading on a soap? You have to have side eye at a will reading on a soap.
I agree. I actually thought the funeral and the wake and the will reading were good. I thought Melissa Ordway did a wonderful job reading that will and getting choked up. I'm with Mike here, Michael here, because I just, when sometimes I wonder, and it's not just about Young and the Restless, sometimes I wonder, am I totally not getting what the writers want me to get? Because I think we're supposed to root for Kyle and we're supposed to root for Summer. And yet every time they're on my screen, I just say, I hate you. There's no redeeming quality. Kyle gave that snide smile when Theo got that pin. And I thought, are we supposed to side with Kyle? I don't get it. Or when Summer immediately sort of is not nice to Sally, I'm like, I'm kind of like, are we supposed to like Summer in this situation? And then Summer goes off on Kyle, and I'm like, didn't you leave him? Sometimes I think I don't get it. Am I missing something?
Right. And so you pointed out she left Theo as well.
Yes.
So
I think Kyle as a character who started out with so much potential has just spiraled into oblivion. Mm-hmm. They, like, the Young and the Restless has to do something in order to make this character, like, to give him a complete rehabilitation, because what he has become is nearly unwatchable. Now, as for Summer, I know that a lot of people have not been a fan of Summer for years. And when she was first on, before Hunter King went away she didn't technically go away to primetime because she still kept popping up. But before Hunter King had the primetime show, there were times that I wasn't that big of a fan of Summer. But in the wake of the primetime show, I think that Hunter King has come back and her acting, she has leveled up her acting. Mm-hmm. And as a character, I think that Abby is one that is actually sort of matured, but in a way that isn't she's this is a bad comparison because she never went this far, but she's not like the naked heiress anymore.
Right.
Rather than being a naked heiress like Abby, she's more of a manipulative person like her mother, Phyllis. And so she's matured into that. And I also think that Summer as a character is now giving us more depth and poignancy at times when before the primetime show, I feel like there Summer could be very one note, but now we're seeing a full range of who Summer is. The storylines don't always help it, but I think that Hunter King in her portrayal of Summer, and I know that we weren't talking about like acting. I'm just saying my overall sense of the character of Summer since Hunter King had the primetime show has been that this character has had a vast improvement, and I enjoy watching her with Nick. I enjoy watching her with Phyllis. I enjoy her other interactions.
Oh,
I don't like her with Kyle
at all.
And so I think that a lot of what you can tell me if I'm wrong, because obviously you have your own opinions, but I think that a lot of the problem that you may have with Summer is residual after effect of how bad Kyle has become.
I think the thing is that I agree with you that Summer's improved and I think that she's matured, but I don't think she's the schemer that she could be. She comes off as petty and insecure.
They could make her more Phyllis. Like,
yes, they could actually. Yeah. I think the thing is that she's a rich, spoiled girl who whines and cries when she doesn't get what she wants, and then she runs away. And that's the petty that I see. And she needs to be a little bit more developed in her manipulation if that's the direction they want to go. I think all of the characters that are young on this show, they have a good group of people, but they really need to define a direction, because Kyle and Summer and they're just idle. That, you know, Mariah is like Aunt Liz in the coffee shop.
She's Aunt Maggie. I mean, 30-year-old lesbian Aunt Maggie.
She has become Gina from the the colonnade room.
Gina, Gina Roma, yeah. But yeah. She's basically Aunt Liz.
Well, no, but I'm just like,
yeah. I have to say, just really fast, Michael Melor, Hunter King. One of my frustrations is that I think the acting and the actors are very good. My issue is that Kyle, Lola, Summer, Theo are the young 20-somethings on this show, and they're not young and restless. They're young and whiny.
And they're all married.
They're just whiny. And Summer's been married. Summer and Kyle have both been married 3 times. I just don't get it.
So on last week's podcast, we talked a little bit about Billy and Lily. I think that there would be more potential with Lily and Adam. That's just my personal thing. But
Lily and Nick.
Pardon?
Yeah.
Did you say Lily and Nick?
Yep.
I did. There was a dream episode of Victor's a few years ago, and in that episode, Nicholas and Lily were married, and she was flaunting her money all over Genoa City, and I thought, they have got magical chemistry.
That is not the Lily we have seen in years, but what I was thinking is, we never really had any type, like, correct me if I'm wrong, because my mind might be a little bit fuzzy in this whole malaise of COVID. Did Summer's affair with Billy ever go anywhere beyond Phyllis?
No.
No, in fact, Phyllis tried to blackmail Billy with that intel a week or so ago. Yeah.
So if I were at the Young and the Restless and I had a character like Summer who could be a hellion and needs to be written a little bit better, if you're going to go with Lily and you're going to have Billy, why not a Summer, Billy, Lily triangle? Because Lily's going to be sort of the good girl, as she has been for a very long time. Summer, because of the fact that she had the affair with Billy before, and there's the connection there, could use some form of manipulation. That could actually be a good triangle.
I'm not sure I like the combination of Summer and Billy. I didn't really. The only reason why I thought it was,
I thought it
was revenge sex for Billy, and that's the only thing that I thought was good about
it. And it was a bet for Kyle and Summer.
But right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Summer doesn't have to be in love with Billy, and Billy doesn't have to be in love with Summer.
Agreed.
All this takes is Billy gets drunk because of something that happens with Lily, and Summer has something that's going wrong, and they end up in bed together, and they wake up, or else one of them manipulates the other one. It could totally be a situation in which Billy wants to be with Lily, but Summer's the one who's manipulating, sort of, going back to Austin and Carrie on Days, and yep. Sammy being the spoiler. Yep. I could totally see a Sammy, Austin, Carrie in Summer, Billy, Lily. No one who ever watched Days of Our Lives expected Austin to actually end up with Sammy.
No.
Austin and Carrie were endgame. I think that you could totally do Summer in a Sammy role.
Then something has to be on the other side of Billy to make him nervous that he's going to lose something.
Sally.
If something
Sally sees
go.
Them walking out of the hotel room.
There has to be something like,
play
you know,
like that.
I am positive that the writers at The Young and the Restless could do what it takes to recreate the basic classic soap trope of a triangle of a good girl with a bad boy being or a good boy being manipulated by a bad girl. I'm fully confident that The Young and the Restless could do that. Bold and Beautiful?
No, it takes too much time to do that.
Right. They don't actually let the story build at the Bold and the Beautiful.
They ain't got time. It's like, we got to move. We got to motor these stories.
Well, election counts take longer than a story on the Bold and the Beautiful.
I see no lie. No lie detected. The GIF. Okay. Speaking of time, before we move on to the next soap, I want to touch on Chelsea being locked up in the room and her discovery of Adam targeting Newman. Thoughts? Either one of you? Jump in.
I'm not sure what Adam's plan is, so I don't know. I find this whole thing of him debating with his 11-year-old inner child to be very odd and out of place. And then I know that Chelsea left him. I'm assuming that it was Adam that had her kidnapped because he sent text messages to everybody that she was fine. I don't really understand where he thinks the threat is from Chelsea. Does he think she's going to go? I don't know. There's a lot of question marks in my head about what's going on there, but that's all I got.
Josh,
it's going to, you know, next week, like Chelsea, I guess Chance and Chloe are going to try to, I don't know. Go Josh.
It's yeah, there's mess. Three random characters. You know, really.
It's a big mess. I think it occurred to me watching it that Adam coming unhinged and seeing this hallucination right after Billy did the same thing is a little tiresome. Mark Grossman's wonderful. He is playing unhinged very well. I think it makes sense that he had Chelsea kidnapped in his own head because Chelsea kind of figured out what he was going to do maybe. And he just is like, I can't deal with you because I don't trust you anymore. And they did a good job, I thought, with him, with Faith going after him in front of Sharon.
That
because
was awesome.
Sharon was the last person he had left that he felt like was on his side. And now he's alone. And alone Adam is a dangerous Adam. So I don't have a problem with Adam coming unhinged and going after Victor. It's kind of classic. Or going after Newman. It's kind of classic. But I don't understand Chelsea. I don't understand Chloe. I don't understand Chance. I don't understand any of what's going on around it. I don't know if it's I don't understand it or I don't care. Because there's no chemistry between Mark Grossman and Missy Claire Egan, and I love both of them. Chance and Chloe and all, I just don't care. I want to care. But I often watch The Young and the Restless, and I have had, I will say up front, I know I've had a lot of complaints about it recently, but I actually had really fond, a good time watching it with the warm Abbott stuff this week. But I oftentimes hear myself saying out loud, did I miss something? Did I miss an episode? Because I don't know where whatever it is on my screen. And usually it's about Adam and Chance and all of that stuff. Sometimes I just don't get it. I don't get the connection.
Because every once in a while they'll refer to something that happened in Las Vegas, but they never really go farther with it. We don't know. Like, Alyssa's out there somewhere, right?
I don't care.
She ran away.
And I think maybe Nina coming back will help me with Chance.
They circle back to it periodically just to remind you that it's out there, but they don't really go anywhere with it.
A soap that is going all kinds of places, almost as fast as The Bold and Beautiful, but with much more plotting or strategic story craft.
Where are you going with this?
Is Days.
I wasn't sure which one you were going to, actually.
Is Days of Our Lives, because we had the breakout ended, the memorial/funeral for Sierra happened, and we're already on to a party in which Abby is getting Abby has uncovered a secret about Jack and Kate, not two characters that I would ever normally think of together in my head, especially when I'm like it. Pardon?
I said that's kind of why I like it, because I wouldn't have considered it.
Well, in my mind I'm thinking to myself, I'm sort of digging Kate with Jake.
Oh yeah.
And now we have this random affair that has not been mentioned once or alluded to the best of my recollection, once in the past year. And so yes, we're just throwing this out randomly at the 1 year anniversary for some drama that we didn't play anything out for the entire last year.
Like,
and
it's happening
at the same time that Jake and Kate are actually sort of taking off. I'm like, that seems odd.
Yeah, it is odd. I did wonder about this. Is one of those things where that you would have the furtive glances across the room. I don't even know that Jack and Kate have even crossed paths. I know that Kate has badmouthed Jennifer, but I haven't really seen anything where Kate and Jack have been looking at each other like
Kate has been locked like, up. Kate has had almost I am being slightly exaggerative when I'm saying this. Kate has had no screen time with Jack in the past year. I mean, if she has, it has like been in some sort of like, I can't even remember a time, but if like in a hypothetical scenario, if she has, it might have had been a scene in which she was doing something for Abe as the person who works for Abe. But like Jennifer, I don't even know if Jennifer's had a scene with Kate in the past year. Like,
right.
If you're going to pop this letter and cause all this drama for Abby, like, why weren't there hints for the entire past year? It's almost.
I didn't want to use the term shadowy figures, but I was thinking something along the lines of some sneaky behavior where you thought they were trying to hide something, but you didn't know what they were trying
back,
to hide.
We are back to, with the 1 year jump, tell instead of show. There is no reason why there couldn't have been glances at minimum. Yeah. Like, or at least the two characters share a scene. I mean, as many times as Jack has burst into the police office and as many times as or the police department through into the like holding room, surely Abe and Kate could have been at the police department a few of those times so that you could have actually had some random interactions with Jack and Kate.
I don't disagree with you. I mean, it did come out of nowhere. And
chiropractor is making
I don't know where this
fortune
is going.
Off of me lately. Watch with my neck swinging so fast.
But the thing is I agree with you that it did come out of nowhere. And there are goods and bads to that. I like the good of a surprise.
I'm not saying that it won't, like, I'm not saying that the story going forward won't be good.
Yeah, and I just think, and this, I know that you have a particular issue with this. I think that when they planned out the time jump, it allowed them to create story whenever they needed to, and have it taken place in the year that we didn't see. And I like those possibilities. On the other side, Ron is choosing to tell them and then tell them in the current day and then go backwards rather than giving us hints. And so I know that that's something that's a particular issue for you. I don't have such an issue with it. I'm willing to take the ride to see where we go.
Kate's journey for this past year has been, she started out as a waitress at the pub.
Yes, she did.
For no apparent reason.
And you think she could have given Jack a cup of coffee.
Right. I mean,
she gave him more than a cup of coffee. So.
Well, but like, she started out as a waitress at the pub. She somehow ended up as Abe's social media person, PR person. And now we're getting an after effect, or like we're being they're not rewriting history, because obviously this was in the plan, but they gave us nothing over the past year, in which a big portion of that year Kate was doing random shit for no apparent reason.
I agree with you. I think that Days, and maybe it's Ron, I don't know, has the same issue with Lauren Coslow as they have with Rebecca Herbst on General Hospital. They're both wonderful actresses who should be front and center, and they just don't quite know what to do with them. Now, said that being said, I think that the reveal of Kate and Jack right now works because Melissa Reeves isn't there. Because now we're playing off Katie McClain, and we know the history of when Melissa Reeves and Lauren Coslow played these two characters. When you have a new person coming in and playing an iconic role, I think that it would be hard for us to accept that Jennifer wouldn't know or wouldn't have had any suspicions or wouldn't have thought whatever because she doesn't like Kate. But with Katie McClain in the role, I kind of warmed to it a little bit. I thought, okay,
it was the opposite. The fact that we're now having this story being told, that they can't do any like really good flashbacks. Are we going to get a flashback in which we're going to see Jack beside Jennifer's bed with Kate standing by?
They showed it.
Yeah, there's a picture.
I haven't watched the promo, so.
Yeah. It's Katie McClain is the one that's in the bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're redoing the flashbacks.
Speechless. Luke is speechless.
It's not that I'm speechless. I'm just really trying to choose my words very carefully because I just wish Ron. I wish there wasn't all the tell. I wish that he would give us the hints. He didn't do it. He didn't do it with the shadowy figures. He didn't do it with Kate and Jack. Like, we're not asking you to give away the whole inheritance. But give us something in the past year that actually,
like context, maybe just set it up, frame it, whatever. Yeah, no, I get that.
It doesn't have to be that they're in like it. It doesn't have to be that we're having like the glances that are like sexual tension glances, but there can be off the cuff remarks.
I do think that Ron goes for the splash, and in his mind, he has to surprise us. And that happened with, you'll go all the way back to finding out that Claire is the one who set that fire. Olivia Rose Keegan gave an interview and said, "I wish I had known during the scenes originally, and I would have played them differently." So I have the feeling that's just sort of a Ron thing, that he's trying to make a splash, and he thinks in order to not give it away, he doesn't give you anything up front. That just seems
plus
to be a
plus it also re- I mean I
it's
don't
not
know
that
if
he doesn't give
factor,
you anything
but
up front. He doesn't give you anything for an entire year.
Yeah, but there may be another part of it is that it being filmed so far ahead, it remains spoiler free, and I don't know if that's a reason. But I mean, I don't know. I'm just speculating.
What is there that would be in spoilers about Jack and Kate having a random run-in?
I don't disagree with you. I just think it's the way he tells stories. And I think that's just the way it is. I think he just tells stories. He makes the splash and then he goes back and fills in the story as opposed to giving you the lead up.
I will say this. He's giving us the lead up with this money laundering story with Philip.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Luke, I about squealed out loud this week. And this is about Philip, but I just had to say this. I don't know if you saw the 55th anniversary photo that Days took for Entertainment Weekly. But in that photo, there's all the couples are together and it's all very well staged. But right there in the back, embracing, is Nadia Bjorlund and J. Kenneth Johnson. I was like, Chloe, Philip and Chloe. I love Philip and Chloe. And I thought you liked Philip and Chloe, too.
I now have to choose my words very carefully.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you did like Philip and
I do like Philip and Chloe, but I have a hard time with JKJ.
Okay.
I like Chloe anytime she's on my screen. I do not like that she had to fill in story for Eve going off the rails. But I'm struggling with Philip's return. I'll leave it at that. But I do appreciate Belle, Philip, that era.
I understand. I totally get where you're going with this one, because as somebody who didn't really watch when Philip was amongst all the, you know, all that time of period that they were all together, it was a long time ago, but I also think that there's development on that front that I'm hoping that will kind of hook
it's coming in, so. Yeah,
so this is how I will put it as diplomatically as I possibly can. I don't remember Philip being this mustache twirly. Also, storyline, I mean, he's always been a bad boy as I remember it. Maybe I'm wrong, feel free to correct me, Josh.
Philip is Rick Forrester. He's always the son who wanted his dad's love, who could never quite get there, so he went through manipulative ways.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because when I watch Philip right now, what I see is the soup with Ridge and Rick.
Interesting. I don't see that. I'm curious. Keep going.
I am getting so much overacting, mustache twirling, and heaven knows I love a good scenery chewer. This is me we're talking about. Gloria. I mean,
oh yeah,
Louise Sorrell. I love those. Like, I love characters that can eat some scenery. I am really struggling with this, and every time I watch him trying to be like, it's not quite this bad. Like, it's maybe like three steps up from when Michael was CEO of ELQ and he just looked like he needed to go find a big boy suit or something.
I don't think you're off with that.
Philip, for me, in this feels way out of his league.
And I think
he's being led around. I believe that the promo that you didn't see, there's somebody behind the steering wheel.
Well, no, I know. I saw the photo on.
Gotcha.
I haven't actually watched the entire promo. I know what the photo and that type of stuff is. I just hadn't seen the specific scene.
Gotcha. But this is an example, Luke, of what you're saying you want from Ron, because he's giving you the lead up.
Saying. This is one story where I'm actually getting the lead up. It's just that I'm struggling with Philip.
I get that. And I think I wonder how they've isolated J. Kenneth Johnson a bit in this story, where he's really only with Xander and Sarah and occasionally with Belle and Sean. But I think that when Chloe comes back, because Belle is going to propose to Sean next week, and we're going to go down a road of Belle and Sean are going to renew and they're going to be married again, and Philip and Chloe and Jan, and they're recreating this Last Blast crew with minus Mimi. I think it's smart to have pulled these familiar characters back. But I wonder when it gets going like that and they're all around each other, if maybe he won't settle in a little bit more. I'm being eternally optimistic.
I hope that Nadia Bjorlund, I hope that Chloe helps out with that. Let's talk a little bit about Trip. At this point, the DNA tests are back. They say that they are, they say that Trip is the father. I feel like any, pardon?
No, I was going to just jump in and say the wording that they're using is interesting because they're saying he shares DNA with the baby.
Well, that's what I said the whole time. I still think, and I still maintain that this new assistant is the baby daddy. The person that Claire's, the guy that Claire's falling for, whose name I cannot remember,
Charlie,
is the baby daddy. Like, if it is not Charlie, considering how far out they write this, they could potentially change it because everybody might think it's Charlie. But like, in my mind, if it's not Charlie, and I don't believe it's Trip, thus far we have no one on screen who would be an otherwise viable.
That's
potential
true.
Father.
No, and Ava's coming back. So that's I mean,
spoiler
you're setting
alert.
Up well, you're setting up Trip's mother, Trip's father, potentially.
A month ago I said that I like be based on the speech patterns that this new guy has, that it was very Trip sounding. I am still convinced they're half brothers, and I've been that way for what, late August?
I agree with you, Luke.
If,
I agree with you.
If Trip did not do it, which he gave a really good, like, if I was Kayla, I might be wavering on my belief. That's how good he was at it, trying to convince people that he was, or Steve and Kayla, that he was not the father. There has to be another explanation. And the way they worded it, like Josh pointed out, was that, you know,
there Kayla, already, yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
There's no way that it, I mean, if it's not Trip, then it's got to be somebody he's related to that we don't know about.
Kayla said the only other person that this could be is your father. Now, it made me think, going back, I think the only reason that we know that Steve and Trip are father and son is because Ava said so. I don't know that we ever got a DNA test proving that Steve is actually Trip's father, and so that's a maybe. I don't really know, but it's certainly possible that Charlie is also Ava's son, and they share DNA. Just one last thing about this before I forget: Mary Beth Evans, and let's go back to Young and the Restless. She and Sharon Case are two people on these shows that you give them whatever to do, and I believe it. They are Mary Beth Evans this week as Kayla, with the conflicted anger and sorrow and horror and anxiety all showing on her face. I just thought she did such a good job this week. I know the story was about Trip and Steve and John and Allie and all this stuff, but I was just focused in on Mary Beth Evans' face. She was giving me soap opera acting wonderfulness. I just loved it.
And they did reiterate, despite the dodgy stories on both sides, that you always believe when a woman says,
"Oh yeah."
I mean, they did a good job of, you know, making Allie feel secure with that declaration. They, you know, they've really addressed Steve's problematic issue with his son being accused of rape when he was obviously married to somebody who was a rape survivor. So there's just a lot of things going on, and they did address them in the conversation and bring them out, which I think is good.
This is the good part of the story, is the familial conflict we're getting. This is how you play these stories out. You pit people against John versus Steve, and particularly rage filled John versus Steve. I love rage John, love him. I know we're going to segue to General Hospital soon, but I just have to say, if I don't mention the fact that we got John and Marlena being all John and Marlena and getting those flashbacks from those weddings, I was in heaven.
The photo book was a nice touch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's talk about General Hospital. They, timed a special episode on women featuring women's right to vote in conjunction with the election. We won't dive into politics at the moment, other than to say that the episode was a nice nod to history and where how far things have progressed. What did you guys think of it?
It was good. It was solid. I like that they did it. I don't always like special episodes, but I did like this one. I thought it was a nice touch to have those candles from Port Charles that Lucy lit, which is what caused the time thing to happen or caused them to hallucinate or whatever. I thought all of the women that transferred from present day to the suffragist storyline were good. We don't have to dive too far into it, but I will say there was a little friction in my head that we were only addressing gender and not race. And I know this was about gender, but it's hard to talk. You can't really talk about gender without talking about race. So that didn't play so well with me, but I thought everybody did a really good job and it was fun and it was educational, a little schmaltzy at times, but I liked it.
Mike?
Overall, I would say it was a good episode. I mean, we've been watching the election results this week nonstop, and not once has anybody brought up that this is the 100th anniversary of the women's right to vote. Not in anything that I've been listening
to. But daytime.
Yeah, well, so the only thing that I would mention that I saw, it's not something that has been touched on necessarily in the aftermath of the election results, but on election day, I did see segments where they went to that gravestone and they put the I voted stickers all over the gravestone.
Oh, cool. Oh, good.
So I have seen like segments like that, but that was, I primarily watch one news channel, so I don't know what happened on other ones.
I will say there are times where there was a little bit of after school specialty stuff, but I also know that this journey took decades to get there, and then there was decades to follow. So for one soap opera that's on every day to take 40-ish minutes to drill down to one historical moment, that's a lot. There was a lot to grasp, but
should get applause for that.
I'm going to give these writers credit. Port Charles, New York is about where this movement started. You go down the road in Seneca Falls, there's the Women's Rights National Museum. You know, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Susan B. Anthony, we're all in that area. So right where Port Charles is supposed to be around Rochester, Buffalo area, this is exactly the type of story that befits that history of Port Charles.
It's almost as if someone has knows a thing or two about New York.
It doesn't have palm trees in the summer or the winter.
In present day storylines on General Hospital, Alex Merrick is in Port Charles, and in 1 week she kidnapped Anna escaped. She kidnapped Maxie. Anna caught up with him. Peter, but
Peter's mask is slipping a little bit.
The Finn dynamic, like, there's a lot to cover in it, and I know how much Jillian and has been looking forward to the day that we get the clarification.
I know, right?
That Alex is the mother. And last week we touched on it because obviously Alex, because we were headed this way, but Alex hadn't appeared on screen. So it would have been nice if Jillian had been here for this discussion, but she'll be back next week. So we'll see what she has to say. I know that this is just me, but seeing Anna and Alex, I really need David Hayward to arrive in Port
Charles. I saw
your
tweet and I thought the same thing.
I need David Hayward. How can we have all of this great hospital drama going on and not have David Hayward come to Port Charles?
I like Britt, but I really feel like the big shocker would have been if Cyrus had brought in David Hayward as the new chief of staff.
Well, but the thing about that is that because David Hayward always tries to put on that veneer of respectability through his research and his science and all the other stuff, they could, at this point, they could totally bring him in, still have Britt as the chief of staff, because in theory, thus far, they've brought Britt back to do almost nothing that is Britt-esque.
Right.
So if they're going to have her be someone who is just more susceptible to Cyrus, and we maybe get something later on if Mama returns, David Hayward as the resident foil for all these doctors and the nurses that we're getting. I mean, we've got Willow is going to be a nurse, is going to nursing school, and like TJ is in the hospital, and we've got the stuff going on with Epiphany.
Very random, by the way.
Pardon?
I just said very random, by the way.
Right. But there is no better time to bring in a doctor with an ABC soap pedigree when you have Anna and Alex on screen going toe to toe than to have David Hayward show up.
Yeah, I agree. And it could probably help me a little bit just to know, like, I remember David and Alex on All My Children. I would love to have a little bit more knowledge of how Alex gets this history on General Hospital, because on All My Children, she wasn't evil. And I don't understand evil Alex on General Hospital and not evil Alex on All My Children.
And I would say that the only other thing, because I'm sure that there were a bunch of General Hospital diehards who were like,
oh, yeah,
giving me massive side eye and eye rolls as they were listening to me talking about bringing back David Hayward because of the whole like stigma about bringing on One Life to Live and All My Children characters.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. We need someone like David Hayward in this hospital so that whenever we can get rid of this painful Cyrus story, that there's something good still there to cause drama. And since they're declawing Britt, David Hayward, I mean, just think of the potential of, like, you bring David Hayward back, not only does he impact the hospital, but there are any number of single women or women in relationships who could end up like having faltered things. I mean, not for nothing, but David Hayward and Elizabeth might be hot.
Yeah, I was also thinking I would have them bring back Rebecca Herbst as Hayden and put her with David Hayward.
Well, we may have to wait on that. I don't know if she...
Rebecca Budig, I'm sorry.
Right. We may have to put a pin on that one because Rebecca Budig, I've been watching the new show with Gabrielle Union and it's LA's Finest.
Yeah.
And Jessica Alba. And Rebecca Budig plays a high-powered attorney who's basically the mouthpiece of, like, she's not the mouthpiece of the mob, but she's basically the legal enforcer who works with the county, like the city district. Like, she's the person who can go from a room where someone's dead body is to having a sit down with the county attorney type thing.
Okay.
And so I don't know what her availability is because I haven't checked her status on that. So I'm not sure if she could come back. If she could do it, then yes, I would love that. But this is not the David Hayward podcast. I know people have said that this can be the Sammy Brady podcast, and I will give you that. I don't apologize for it. But this will not become the David Hayward podcast. So, Mike, what did you think of Alex, Anna, Peter, Maxie?
I thought it was, you know, I don't have a history with Alex, but I really like watching Finola Hughes differentiate between the two. So even though when I knew it was Alex pretending to be Anna, I knew who it was supposed to be. But I think this is interesting. I mean, Peter is going after Spinelli and he is starting to get a little concerned about people digging around his past. Then he's going to find out, well, I think Finn alluded to it, that, you know, Alex was his mother. Now, you know, where this goes to his paternity, because, you know, Josh and I were speculating that Valentine could be a potential father versus Faison. But that, you know, it took them a long time to undo this. And I'm pretty sure that Jillian is sending Chris and Dan and Chris a bottle of champagne and a bouquet of flowers.
She said on last week's podcast that whenever she finds out who was which of those two is responsible for this very important correction, that it will no longer be a Chris and Dan and Chris. It will be a Chris and Dan or a Dan and Chris.
Not both. I thought overall General Hospital was really good this week. I mean, I felt like things were moving, things were popping. I mean, you have Ryan and Cyrus and Julian, and then you got Ava going in and trying to scoop Julian up, and then you've got Jason and Britt playing, you know, mental pool with each other. You've got Sam and Alexis, which, you know, I'm kind of dodgy on Sam a lot, but Sam had really good points for Alexis. Alexis had really good points for Sam. I thought their argument was really good. And I
love
that Alexis is just saying, get the hell out of here. I'm going back to my vodka bottle. But, you know, this whole week was the only thing I find a little weak is Franco and his brain tumor, revisiting that. But
you brought up two things that I want to touch on. So thank you for that. Mm. Everybody knows I've never been the biggest fan of Sam. I don't consider her a Cassadine, but I love her as Alexis's daughter. But I have never enjoyed Sam so much as I did this week with her just shredding Alexis. And maybe it's because Alexis is one of my all-time favorite General Hospital characters, and I want her to have as much meaty stuff as she can get. But those scenes were amazing. Now, on the list of things that no one asked for in 2020, revisiting Franco's tumor is right up there with killer hornets, boars, and cocaine stashes. I mean, what the ever living frack?
It's like Franco is that character. Like, I don't want to say they don't know what to do with him, but sometimes I really feel like they just don't know what to do with him because he's an artist. He's in the hospital doing art therapy. Then he's got a brain tumor, and then he has a twin. Then he doesn't have a twin, and then he was molested as a child. I mean, it's like freaking pinball machine with that character.
We just are now resolving the atrocity that is Peter being Anna's son after, what, 3 years of agony?
That's all it's been.
I know, right?
That was a rough estimate. I don't know.
I'm sure it was. It feels like 30.
But exactly. General Hospital post-pandemic has been on point. They have tightened. They have made the stories good. They are fixing Anna and Alex. And so someone just thought it would be a wonderful idea that after we have all of this progress to bring back tumor in a jar.
And somehow we have to have Jason involved and Jason's agreeing to kill. It's just stupid. It's stupid, stupid, stupid. We don't need to do this. Franco is one character we need to go forward with. We can't mess with his past anymore.
Right. And we can just, because General Hospital has so much good to talk about, we can just focus on the good stuff. You know, like I love Jordan getting a dressing down from Portia. And then
that was great.
Them opening up to each other and coming up with a plan.
Ryan and Sonny and Ava and Julian was good.
It was good.
Poor dumb Julian, though, spilling all the tea. I mean, everybody knows the secret now. He's got to go.
I just don't understand. I agree with you. Everything that you're saying, I agree with. I think post-COVID, halting of the show, and when they come back, General Hospital has been on point.
General Hospital, for me, because of how vast the improvement had been, had almost been a lock for my pick for best soap of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And you're bringing back the fucking tumor?
Oh, we're still up. We went back to the tumor.
They're trying your patience here, Luke. They really are.
I mean, shoot yourself in a foot with a Yeah, missile.
It just doesn't make any sense. Whatsoever.
Well, then just make it a little bit more. I don't know.
No,
I think they're trying to make it.
There is like, no malevolent. Making it a little no. bit more, Mike. This no, should no, not be happening. Like, period.
You've got Liz. You're not talking to Liz. You go to decide to go to Jason and say, "Jason, kill me." I mean, there's whole things going on. Like, if you're going to go this route, there's a different way to go.
This is totally hypothetical because I in no way, shape, or form believe that General Hospital is going to kill off Franco, portrayed by Roger Howarth, one of ABC Daytime's all-time most popular actors. But if you were going to fucking kill off Franco because of a tumor, why wouldn't you have had that built into the storyline of the blackmail with Ava, who is an assassin, and Nicholas, who is a Cassadine?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean,
it doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense. Fix it, General Hospital.
And it
you do not film 6 months ahead. Fix this, and you still have a chance of being the best soap of the year.
I'm not here for 3 years of this shit.
I am not.
It stands
fix
out.
Fix it.
Particularly now, because GH is so good, that coming up was like, what in the ever-loving... I'm GH from 6 months ago is going on here, because this story is such a dud from the start. The premise is such a dud that it doesn't fit with the rest of this tight running ship that's happening over there at ABC. I mean, they're doing a really good job, but then that happened and I'm like, what the fuck? What is that?
The only thing that I can think of is that giving General Hospital, Dan and Chris and Dan, the benefit of the doubt. This might have been the thing that they were like came up with just before the show went into back into production, and they had been drinking so much because of COVID. I don't know if they drank. This is a total joke, but they had been in such a stupor from being at home, stay home things, and they had been self-medicating. I don't know if they drink. This is a total joke. But this is like some sort of COVID-induced hazy decision to bring back the fucking tumor.
It's terrible. To invoke Jillian, it's terrible.
It's funny because you were talking about that Anna Alex thing, and it reminds me like a month or so ago it was, you know, Olivia and Robert in Monte Carlo, and then this whole Anna Alex tied up with a bomb and the guns, Blade. That's very General Hospital, too. I mean,
It feels like General Hospital again, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It really does.
And then Laura's going to be coming back, so...
I feel like with Days, Young and the Restless, and General Hospital, and I'm warming back to Young and the Restless, two parts of it, that this week there were times, and I said it out loud to Michael, I was like, this is my soap. And I meant it about all three of them at one time.
General Hospital feels like General Hospital.
Yes.
I do not like the Cyrus storyline. I do not like it, but it still feels like General Hospital.
Absolutely.
Like, Cyrus right now feels like Sonny, the overwhelming weight of Sonny and the mob back in the Franzian days and the Guza days, you know? Like, for people who are not fans of the mob... Cyrus gives me flashbacks of that kind of stuff, not because he's in the mob, but just because of how much I dislike that element of the show. But everything else on General Hospital, up until the fucking tumor, has been fantastic.
The Cyrus stuff that I don't love either, at least it's blended with the hospital.
Yeah,
the hospital's got high stakes in this. And even if I don't love Cyrus...
You know, M. Ryland's leaving and Lulu's getting involved and Jason and Peter are trying to tell her to back off because she's going to get herself into hot water. And it's like, you know, it's interesting to me that this is a child of Luke and Laura that hopefully, I don't know what's going to happen, honestly, but I hope that she doesn't end up dead because, you know,
when we look at
how this storyline is going, the thing with Cyrus that I have the bigger issue with is that he's sufficiently creepy, this guy. He does a great job of just putting the creep vibe out.
Mike, let's just pause this right here.
They each have sort of moved.
Mike, let's just pause this right here. Hypothetically speaking, and I'm not saying they are, even if they were to kill off Lulu, quote unquote, what happened with Lucky? Dante was believed to be dead.
Right. I mean, now he's back and Lulu's leaving.
Robin was believed to be dead.
Yep.
Jason.
Right. I mean, like.
This is where General Hospital turns into Days of Our. Yeah, it's not Days of Our Lives.
But the thing about it is that unlike Days of Our Lives, where you'll end up with the entire cast on believing to be killed off and they all end up being on an island because everybody's been killed off and is being held hostage. General Hospital doesn't generally go that far.
No.
Generally, when they kill off a character that's not really dead, they do it to provide a powerful story, and then they lay the groundwork for that character to come back in some form in another way.
Right. Yeah, I get that.
So
one of Elizabeth's children was also dead.
Oh God, yes.
Little Jake was dead, and he was being held on an island.
The problem with General Hospital is that the characters that need to die rarely actually die.
Yeah, all the people calling for Peter's death, Wes Ramsey not going anywhere.
Well, but look how long it took us to kill off that painful-ass boy.
Oh, Oscar and his freaking meadow.
I always want to call him Oliver, which is why I did not use his name, because I always get his name wrong. But, like, General Hospital never kills off the right characters, but when they do kill off characters, they leave just enough of a question.
Right.
Generally speaking.
Nicholas.
Unless you're a serial killer victim, in which case you're sort of dead. But we don't miss miss Ava's daughter or Sabrina at all.
No, the thing is, what happens
to other people.
This is the royal we. Have you not heard that this is the royal we?
But I've also, like, what I was like with the Cyruses, they have to start moving it forward a little bit. Cyrus has been in the hospital for a long time, but we don't really know why he's there. Britt is in there, but we don't know why she's there.
Part of the problem is that Jimmy Francis.
It, but in the bigger picture, if it's somebody versus Sonny, they're going to lose. So
here's the thing that seems odd about Cyrus to me, besides the fact like that I just don't like the character. I don't mind his interaction and his getting his claws into the hospital, because it gives us a mob in the hospital type thing, which sort of brings both worlds together. I get why they did it. I'm not a fan of the specific character of Cyrus. The part that I don't get is why we're talking about Cyrus going out to karaoke with Epiphany and Franco.
I didn't really get that either.
When you have the high stakes of Cyrus getting his claws into the hospital while at the same time blackmailing the chief of police and going toe to toe with Sonny and having Sonny's cousin be his bodyguard, those are all very high stakes elements. Cyrus doing something as mundane and normal as going to karaoke just sort of undermines it.
Yep, I agree with you. I think that a part of the problem is that they intended to immediately focus him on Jeannie Francis as Laura. And she didn't come back. She's not. I think she's just now coming back. And so for 2 or 3 months, they've had to sort of string this along. And because I think the intention is to have his focus on Laura. And then when she didn't come back, I think they had to sort of scramble a bit. That's just my guess.
Final thought, Mike.
Thank you, General Hospital, for giving me Chase wet coming out of the shower to answer the phone. And thank you, Woyoung and the Restless, for giving me an angry Faith. And I just thought that girl did so good standing up to Adam and exasperating Sharon before she ran out. And I'm looking forward to see what's coming down the pipeline for that one.
Genoa said I better be careful because that child... Heaven help us all. We thought that Summer was bad. Faith is going to just be a nutcase by the time she gets into her teens. Josh, final thought?
I want to also thank General Hospital for remembering that Dr. Terry Randolph is a character. I really like Cassandra James. Yeah. They had her in scenes this week with Epiphany and Elizabeth at the house, and then she was included in the suffragist episode. I really like her. I really like her a lot. And I hope that they'll feature her more because she's got some talent and I think she adds to the cast.
She'll be there because she's Franco's doctor.
Oh God.
my final thought is sort of a callback to Mike's comment, because not all characters that die are dead, as in Taggart, which we were quite upset when they killed off Taggart. Mm-hmm. And I am so happy to have Taggart back on my screen. I still am like totally conflicted about this like dynamic that Taggart and Sonny have.
Agreed.
As next door neighbors. I'm totally conflicted about it because I can't decide if I like it or if I hate it so much that I like it. But I'm just so happy to have Taggart back. All I'm saying is, if a major character is killed off, Mike, Taggart was dead for all of 3 months.
Yeah, and it's totally possible that they could just put Lulu on ice for a while, and while literally Dante does his thing and she goes undercover to take care of something. I just don't want to see Laura lose another child. That's all.
Stavros could come back. I mean, this is me joking. I do not know anything for spoilers.
Get another cooler. What does she have?
Right.
Like,
but I mean, it would be more in character to have Stavros come back, and like we see the last scene we see of Lulu is her on a table with Stavros standing there.
I'll take any opportunity to see Robert Kelker Kelly on my screen.
God, I miss him.
Mercy.
On that note, we would encourage you to comment on this sort of thirsty episode of Daytime Confidential at daytimeconfidential.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DCConfidential. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/DCConfidential. You can find me on Twitter at Luke_Kerr. Mike is at MPJ24. Josh is at DrJoshua09. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long.
Bye.
Ooh, I'm a little heated after that. Now I'm, ooh, mercy, Robert Kelker Kelly.
Oh, I remember him on
Tumor.
I was a impressionable young adult when he graced my screen on Another World. I was like, oh my God. Child.
My first exposure. That's not a great term. Was on Days.
Oh yeah,
as Bo.
He was a great recast, Bo. He really was.